We're in a sermon series called The Path to Greatness. And the reason why we're doing this sermon series, it's a part of preparation for our move from the fireside room to the sanctuary. And when we're talking about this series, the reason is because we want to do great things in the sanctuary. The pastoral team, we are praying for big things and great things to happen. And we realize that in order to get to those great things and greater things and bigger things, it's a long path ahead. And for those of us who are involved in serving, it's not going to be an easy path. It certainly won't be a short path. And so we ask ourselves in this series is, how do we walk this path together? What does it take? What does it take to walk the path to greatness? And we shared in this series, the first week, we said that we're going to have a quality called the servant mindset as opposed to the volunteer mindset. That's the reason why we don't call our helpers volunteers. You're not helping out. You're not volunteering. You are serving. The second thing that we said is we need to value unity and humility over gifts and talents. And the third thing, last week we said that we need to pursue excellence, not only in just the things that we are doing, but in the person that we are. We need to be excellent, or in other words, we need to be holy. And so today, we are going to look at the fourth quality that we need to walk this path to greatness. What is this quality? What is this thing or this secret that's going to help us? And I believe this quality is going to help us endure through difficult times. Endure when the path is very long. When you feel that the path is long and tough and tiring and stressful, this quality will allow us to keep going. This quality will allow us to continue when we feel like we're burnt out from leading small groups, perhaps. It will help you to continue when you feel like, oh, serving in the site team or the production team or the guest team or the high school ministry, all of this is pointless. This quality, I believe, will help you keep going. This quality, I believe, will help you keep going when you feel like preparing for messages, preparing for music and for worship, those are tiring and stressful. I believe it will help you keep going. In many ways, I believe this quality is the driving force and the motivation behind everything that we do. It's the thing that keeps us on the path. And in fact, I would say that this quality does more than just sustains us. It rejuvenates us. It rewards us. It gives us joy as we're going this path. And so the question again is, what does it take to walk this path of greatness? And in particular, what is this last quality that we need? So to find out this secret thing, this secret ingredient, I suggest that we open the Bible to look into a particular group of worshipers at a particular time period. We're going to go all the way back to approximately 10th century BC, to the time of King Solomon. At this time, Israel is a nation of millions and millions of people, hundreds and hundreds of people. And all of those people are scattered around the 12 tribes. Some of you are familiar with those. And during this time, Israel is a nation. It has a capital called Jerusalem, as you can see by the star on the map. Not only was Jerusalem a political capital, it was also a religious capital. Now, what does that mean? That means all of the people of Israel were instructed to go to Jerusalem three times a year, at least three times a year, to go and worship at their major festivals. One of them happening in spring, one in summer, and one's in the fall. Now, this pilgrimage or this path that you have to take, that is not optional. Is not volunteering. It's something that you have to go. It was a law that they observed. Now, if you happen to live in one of those tribes that's pretty close to Jerusalem, that is probably not a big problem for you. It's just like a weekend hike, a weekend getaway. But unfortunately, if you lived in one of those tribes that's a little farther from Jerusalem, that was a problem for you. To give you a contemporary comparison, to make the point, imagine, if you will, that your school or your workplace requires you to take a retreat three times a year to Whistler. And you say, not a problem. Whistler is a pretty good place. The sea to sky highway, that drive is actually pretty good. You can stop along the way, and there's lots of things to see. It's a beautiful scenery. But your school or their organization says, sorry, ma'am, or sorry, brother, you cannot drive. You have to walk. If you walked like a nonstop 24 hours straight, you know how long it's going to take you? It's going to take you at least 4 days, nonstop 24 hours. Now, if you walk like a normal human being, and you take breaks and you sleep through the night, yeah, you guys are normal human beings, you sleep through the night, it's going to take you at least 10-ish days. To which you say, well, why don't I get together my boys, take a week off, that's going to be an epic hiking journey cross country, and we're going to have a lot of stories to tell. In your school or your workplace or the organization or whatever, it tells you, sorry, you cannot go with your boys. You have to go with your family, your entire family, in fact. The grandparent, you have a grandparent? Grandparent who are in their 70s, they're in their walkers and wheelchairs, you have to take them. Your parents, I know your parents' extent of their exercise is taking the garbage out to the garage. You have to bring your parents. You have a little sister who won't stop whining every time you go to a road trip, you have to bring the little sister. You have a baby brother who can barely feed himself, bring your baby brother. You have a little dog that can barely keep up with you when you stroll at the little park, you have to bring the little dog. And not only that, the school says, you have to bring gifts. You have to bring bags and trailers full of gifts and animals and groceries and fruits. You thought carrying two bags of groceries from the TNT to the parking lot was pretty brutal. Have you thought about bringing not only your own luggage, bringing an entire cart full of groceries and a few cows and sheep, and you have to lug this trip? And sorry that I mentioned, the path is actually pretty brutal. Well, the first 2 days is not bad. You're going to start from your hometown area. There's going to be trees, there's going to be ponds, lots of lodging, lots of places to stop. But in that middle, you know, 6 to 9 day period, you're all in the desert. It's not the Sea to Sky Highway, unfortunately. What's there in the desert? Nothing. That's the point. You have the sun scorching your back, and you know what else is there? There are thieves and robbers just around the corner, wild animals hiding. There's no water. You should bring your water. And there is no Airbnb. There's no glamping. Where you have to live is you have to find some caves, find some mountainside. This kind of looks safe and not too sketchy. Why don't you camp there for the night? And at the end, that last little journey, that 3 to 5 days last little journey, you know where you're going? You're going uphill, my friend. Because Jerusalem is built on a hill. You have to muster all of your little strength that you have, and you have to walk up the hill. Have you ever tried that on a hike? You have to do that for 3 days. So if you're lucky, you're going to get there maybe in 10. But if you have to bring your whole family and all the stuff that I just talked about, you might get there in 10 to 20 days. And then you're not done. When you get there, it's actually not a retreat. You actually have to do stuff because it's the festival. It's worship. So you have to attend worship. You have to serve. You have to pray. You have to offer sacrifices. You have to do all of this stuff, social gathering, community work. And after a week of pretty difficult stuff to do, you have to spend the rest of the 10-day or 15-day walking back. And then when you get home, you think, okay, this is all done. But no, you have your daily prayer, your daily rituals, your weekly routines that you have to do. And then you look at the calendar, oh, a couple of days have gone by. You have to start to prep for the next one. Every single year, without any break, you must do it. The path to Jerusalem, 3 times a year. That was Israel's path to worship. Here we are, we are thinking we have it difficult when we have to come an hour early to put out chairs. They have to lug a cow up a mountain. There are levels to this. So the question that I keep coming back to is, what is it that kept them going? What does it take to travel the long and difficult path to greatness? Now, I've teased this long enough. We're going to look at a passage that describes this journey today. And if you have your Bible, I encourage you, you can open up to that middle section called the Book of Psalms. Now, the Book of Psalms is an interesting type of literature. It's actually a collection of poems Or more specifically, it's kind of like songs. There are songs meant to be sung for worship. And in particular, these songs, they are songs of expression. They express our emotions, but more importantly, they are songs of formation. They help us to form our emotions. They help us to form our thoughts and our desires. And so by singing these, the Israelites, and obviously ourselves, we form our thoughts and our desires and our emotions. The one that particularly we're going to look at is Psalm 84. Psalm 84 is a song about the path to worship, the pilgrimage to Jerusalem. It describes for us the quality that one must have to take the path to greatness. One sort of particular side note, the heading of the psalm, Psalm 84, you're going to find that is written by a group of people called the Sons of Korah. Who are the Sons of Korah? Sons of Korah were a part of the tribe of Levi. They were known to be musicians, the servants at the temple. Some of them, get this, some of them were described as doorkeepers. What do doorkeepers do? They keep the door open. No, just sort of just kidding. They let people in, they let people out, they keep some people out, they welcome people in. It's really kind of like the modern day guest team. The Sons of Korah were also described of being people that carry equipments to the temple, carry things in and out of the temple. If you ask me, it sounds a little bit like the modern day site team. Obviously, there are singers and musicians, modern day worship team. So let's see. This OG serving team has written for us a psalm or a song about going to Jerusalem to worship. Let's see what their secret is to serving. Psalm 84, verse 1. The writer says, "How lovely is your dwelling place, O Lord of hosts. My soul longs, yes, faints, for the courts of the Lord. My heart and flesh sing for joy to the living God." The writer at the beginning, he sings praise of God's temple, the place that they're going to worship. And they have known all along what we've just started to learn is that the place is significant, not because the temple is glorious. I mean, it is. Not because the temple was wrapped in gold. Yes, it is. But the place is significant because God dwells there. It's the person that makes the place significant. And he says, my soul longs and faints in my whole body, my heart is dying for the courts of the Lord. Not for the place, but for the person. There is like a pull, a desire, an attraction that brings the writer out to begin his journey, to put him on the path. And he continues, he says, even the sparrow and the swallow and find a nest and a home for themselves, that they may lay her young at your altars, O Lord of hosts, my King and my God. Blessed are those who dwell in your house, ever singing your praise. The little phrase at the back end over there, blessed are, you can translate it sometimes as, oh, how fortunate are they? How lucky are they? Happy are they? Can you hear a little bit of jealousy? Like the writer is jealous that people get to live in the house of God. He is jealous of the birds that get to make their nest at the altar. They get to be where God is. Sometimes he wishes that he is like one of those birds. And sometimes when we read sections like this, sometimes it feels a little distant to us. It's a little unrelatable, yeah? It's like, oh, this is too lovey, too cringy, too lovey-dovey kind of thing. It's unrelatable. I don't get it. But it's a love song. So in my sort of vain attempt to try to make a comparison, there's a song that's written not recently, 1970s. I was not born. I was not listening to this song when I was growing up. But I know of the song called Close to You. Anybody know the song? Carpenters? Don't nod because you'll reveal your age. Just kidding. In this song, there's particularly that first section. I'm not going to sing it, but I'll read for you. Why do birds suddenly appear every time you are near? Just like me, they long to be close to you. Why do birds suddenly appear every time you're near? Just like me, they long to be close to you. The Sons of Korah were writing love songs before the carpenters. It's a love song. I would rather be like the bird that gets to be with you all the time. Have you ever had that thought? Jealous of the people that get to spend time with God every day, all the day in worship. Maybe you're not jealous of the birds in here, but there are certainly a lot of little animals around this Fraser Review building, if you didn't know. There's like Mickey Mouse, Minnie Mouse. Are you jealous of them? I mean, they're not in here, they're outside. So the writer says, I would so want to be like the birds. I'm going to take my step and I'm going to get out of my home and I'm going to begin my path to Jerusalem. Verse 5. He says, blessed are those whose strength is in you, in whose heart are the highways to Zion. And so as he continues and as he embarks on this journey, he finds himself drawing strength from where? Not the water, not the food. He says, I find strength from God, because that desire and that longing to want to see God helps him put one foot in front of the other. And so because of that, he encourages his children and his parents to keep going. He continues to pull that car, you know, one step at a time up the hill. And just as he's on a literal path to a literal temple, he finds that his heart, it's kind of like, what's in my heart? There's also like a highway. Highway from my heart all the way to the temple. I wish my heart is there already. Verse 6. As they go through the valley of Baca, they make it a spring, a place of springs. The early rain also covers it with pools. And so in the middle of the journey, he finds himself in that wilderness place. Valley of Baca is a dry place. It's a wilderness. It's a desert. It's the place where the journey is the most difficult. There's no water. The sun is harsh. There's danger everywhere. They're exhausted. The kids are complaining. The elders need a break. But when the worshipers, they walk through this dry valley, it's as if springs are gushing out of the hills. It's as rain is following them and making the wilderness into a place of abundance. You see flowers blooming, trees are growing, grass sprouting forth, birds are chirping and rabbits jumping around, squirrels climbing trees. It's like a scene straight out of a Disney movie. Their desire and longing for God turns the path of difficulty into a path of blessings. Verse 7, they go from strength to strength. Each one appears before God in Zion. Instead of giving up, instead of being exhausted and burning out, they find themselves going from strength to strength. Every step I take, I have a little bit more energy. I have a little bit more power. I'm going to turn valleys into springs. I'm going to turn desert into pools. I'm going to turn weaknesses into strength. I'm going to turn difficulties into praise until I get all the way to Mount Zion, where the temple, where God is. And when he gets there, he says, a day in your courts is better than a thousand elsewhere. I would rather be a doorkeeper in the house of my God than dwell in the tents of wickedness. When the worshipers, they arrive at the temple, they come back to that familiar feeling that they have known all along. The feeling of meeting a loved one at home. Meeting a loved one after a long road trip. Coming home after studying abroad, work trip, exchange program, reuniting with your loved one, having a home-cooked meal. A day in God's house, back home, is better than a thousand elsewhere. They would rather do the dishes at home, scrub the toilet at home. They would rather be a doorkeeper, put the chairs out, open the doors, a guest team member. They would rather be a doorkeeper at God's house than to be outside. Verse 11, for the Lord God is a sun and shield. The Lord bestows favor and honor. No good thing does he withhold from those who walk uprightly. O Lord of hosts, blessed is the one who trusts in you. When they reflect back on the path, they remember, yeah, the sun was pretty harsh. And there was dangers hiding in the corner. But they find all along that God is like the sun to them, but not the harsh one, is the one that guides them, is the one that gives them warmth, gives them light, that blesses them. And God is the one all along that protects us like a shield. And God gives us favor and honor every time we take that step. No good thing does he withhold from us. They have experienced blessing after blessing as they continue to walk on this path. Turns out, the secret quality, the secret ingredient for those who can continue on the path is actually pretty simple. What does it take for the Old Testament worshipers to go on their journey year after year, three times a year? What does it take for us to overcome the difficulties and exhaustions and tiredness and continue on the path of greatness? It's a simple word. It's a feeling called love. Because they want to see God so much that they don't mind to take the step and to begin the trip. They want to see God so much, they'd rather be like the birds at the temple. They want to see God so much, there's like a highway from my heart all the way to the sanctuary. They want to see God so much that they turn into Disney princesses, blessing everything and flowers blooming after them as they go on their path. They want to see God so much that once they arrive at the temple, they don't want to leave ever again. And they want to see God so much that once they do have to leave, they can't wait to come back. It's a very simple word. It's a very simple feeling called love. Now, before you think to yourself again, that is, oh, it's cheesy, lovey-dovey, unrelatable, impractical, I want to let you know that all of you have this desire. And maybe, perhaps some of you have felt this before. I have. I felt this before. You remember that place? McDonald's? The one that I talked about at the beginning? Number 2 Blundell, McDonald's. Pre-renovation. That was a special place for me because that was my first date with Fizz. Just in case you didn't know where McDonald's is, this is the map of where McDonald's is. That's not the point. The point is this. The heart. That's where Fizz used to live, Blundell, Gilbert area. Now, what is my path to McDonald's? What is my path to the place of encounter? What's that path like? I did not drive back then. I was grade 12. I walked there. Now, for those of you that know me, I don't do exercise. I don't walk. Now, not only did I walk there, I woke up early to walk there. How early? 5 a.m. early. Long story short, she came back from a trip. She was hungry, she wanted food. 5 a.m., you would do anything to wake up at 5 a.m. to have a breakfast with the one that you like. Now, not only did I wake up early at 5 a.m. and walk to McDonald's, I actually got up a little bit before that so that I can get out the door early to where? To walk to her place to meet her farther up earlier and sooner. That's significant. Now, I guess you won't get why it's significant unless I tell you where I lived. That's where I lived. I live so close to McDonald's, I can smell sausage and egg McMuffin from my window. I can literally roll down my stairs to a Big Mac meal. You see what I'm talking about? You have to understand, I am a highly practical, pragmatic, logical person. I calculate the shortest distance between the two points, and I do not waste any steps. That is something that does not make sense. But love doesn't make sense. The path was longer, but it was worth it. I want to give you one more example to make this point. There's actually quite a lot more, but just for the sake of time, I'll tell you one more. In 2013, Fizz and I, we had a chance to go back to Hong Kong together. We were like year one back then. At that time, she lived with her relatives, and I lived with my parents. And as you can imagine, we would spend some of our days together. And there was one particular evening, we said, why don't we get you over to my parents' place, and let's eat and have dinner and play mahjong together. So we started off that day hanging out and then buying some stuff and then coming to my parents' place. And after dinner, we chatted and we played some mahjong. And you know how Asian mahjong is. It takes like forever to end. And so she was here until like 11 p.m., 11:30 p.m. Well, I don't remember exactly, but it was pretty late. So it was time for her to go home. Relatives were calling, oh, where are you? You're at your boyfriend's house, or you should come back around. So the original plan was that my dad and I would drive her home together. But maybe, I don't know, maybe my dad, I swear my dad did it on purpose. He said he was sick. He said he didn't feel well. He said, why don't you do your thing? I have to go sleep right now. I swear he did it on purpose now looking back. And he says, you're on your own. I looked around and I thought to myself, this is your moment. This is your moment. You've known this girl for a year and a half. She's in her 20s in a foreign place. You got to be a man. You got to, you know, bring her home. So I manned up and I said, why don't I send you home? It was like music to Fizz's ears. She received it with a warm and loving smile. Now you might think, Carson, that's a completely reasonable move. But you don't understand. I'm a highly practical, pragmatic, and logical person. I calculate the shortest distance between two points, and I don't waste any steps. I certainly do not backtrack my steps. So when you understand that this is where we lived in Hong Kong, you will understand how much of a love I have for this individual, just in case you're not familiar with Hong Kong geographic. This is where she lived. Halfway across Hong Kong, on the other side of a pretty hard-to-access island called the Hong Kong Island. I, on the other hand, lived in a place called, like a little suburban area called Tuen Mun. Now, also, when you understand that at that point, there's no subway between those two points. You need to take the bus, and multiple buses, I might add, adding to approximately 2.5 hours one way. One way. And the buses, because it's late in the evening and it's the weekend, the buses are at an hour and a half interval, depending on what the bus driver feels like. And get this, I have to make the way back. Now, the alternative, because when you get there, if it's too late, the buses go to sleep or whatever, so you have to take the taxi. It's like $400 to taxi from there all the way back home. I was already home in my PJs. So if you understand my scenario and my situation and the difficulty of the path that I was willing to go, you will understand how much of a love I had for this individual. So I looked at my wallet. I looked at the time, 11:30, 11:45. Let's go. I went down with Fizz. It was the longest wait for a bus ever. It was also the longest bus ride across from Hong Kong. It was the most impractical, most inefficient way to travel. It's a complete waste of money, complete waste of my time. It was tiring and it was exhausting. I slept on the bus. I think she slept on the bus. And get this, when we arrived, I got off the bus and walked her back to her apartment and then watched her go the elevator up. Why is this significant? Because if I stayed on that bus, it might have just looped around. Now I come back and I wait another 1 hour, an hour and a half. I went back home at like 3:30 a.m. The path was long. It was tiring. It was complete waste of money, complete waste of time. It was not a path that I would ever take again, nor would I teach my dear son to do it ever. Unless it's because of love. Because then it would be worth it. The path of serving, the path to greatness, it's long, it's tiring, sometimes it doesn't make sense, sometimes it's inefficient, sometimes it's a waste of time, waste of money. You might feel like, what the heck am I doing over here? Sometimes you will feel defeated, you'll feel burnout, you'll feel like you want to quit. But the path is worth it when you know why you're on it. More specifically, when you know who is at the end of it. So at the conclusion of today, I encourage you to do two things. The first thing is, would you consider to rethink the place, this place that we're going to be gathering in September? This place is not just a place. This is a place that's significant because it's a place of encounter. It's significant because of who is here. The second thing I encourage you to do is rethink the path. Rethink the path. The serving, the work that you have to do, the preparation, the effort, all the things you have to do to get to what we so call greatness. Rethink it. It's not just any walk. It's a walk to that McDonald's. It's like that bus ride halfway across the city. It's a path to an encounter. So every time you prepare for small group, every time you come early for site team, for guest team, whatever, every time you prepare that message or the music team serving, why don't you rethink and reframe the path? It's actually very easy. Why don't you pray Psalm 84? How lovely is your dwelling place, O God? How lovely is Fraserville? Have you ever said that? How lovely is this place? Everything in my body longs to be in God's house. Even the birds outside, the Mickey Mouse outside, they find a home at God's temple. How blessed are they? They get to be here all the time. A day in Fraserville, in the sanctuary, in the fireside room, in the gym, is better than 1,000 elsewhere. Remember, this is a song of formation, not just expression. You can sing those to form your thoughts. I would rather be a doorkeeper, a guest team member, a site team member. I would rather put chairs out, sing songs in the house of my God, than be outside. Rethink the place. Rethink the path. As we end here, I'd like to tell you another path that I've been on recently. Fizz and I have known each other for 13 years now. Needless to say, I have been on many paths with her, sometimes with her, sometimes going to meet her, sometimes she comes to meet me. Recently, though, in the past 6 months, I find myself traveling a different path altogether. Because she's on maternity leave, she's at home for most of the days. Now I'm at work. This is the first time, for a long time now, that we have done something different on our daytime together, because we've always kind of lived in the Richmond area, pretty close to each other. We've always gone to the same school, and we ended up working in the same workplace. So for the past 13 years, I kid you not, maybe like 10 of those years, 13, you know, 11 of those years, we were together. So right now, I'm at a little bit of a foreign place I find myself, because every morning I find myself traveling on a path, a new path, from home, where she is, to work where she's not. And every day at 4 p.m., 5 p.m., I find myself going backwards on that path, going from work where she's not and going home where she is. And it doesn't matter how long I've known her, I still find myself wanting to go down that path, wanting to go home, wanting to clock out just a little early, finish my sermon a little quicker, so I can drive home. But it doesn't mean home is chill, though. In fact, it's anything but. There's a new kid you have to take care of. Sometimes he's noisy, sometimes he's rowdy. You have to take care of, you have to change his diapers. Home is difficult sometimes. Sometimes there's more work at home than work at work. But home is where love is. And without home, I cannot sustain my time outside of home. Without Fizz, I cannot do what I do. And I want to bless you that in many ways, your encounter with God is the same. At the end of each path, you have an encounter. And through that encounter, you find a love that fuels your next steps again. I pray that for some of you, when you come in here, it's gonna be like going home after a long day of work. You had a long week. Some of you have been to the hospital. Some of you had a rough work week. Some of you at home, your children has been difficult and challenging. It's a long week. I know that. But I pray that as you come into here, this place is like home to you. You come here to meet God, and it's as if you have a nice, warm, home-cooked meal. And God rejuvenates you, and God gives you joy, and gives you energy. And when you come here, I know that some of you have a lot of stuff to say. There's a lot of stuff that happened in the week. Maybe you're emotionally stressed, and you're tired, and you're burdened. But I pray that meeting God in here, it's like you have a loved one waiting for you and listening to you. Do you want to vent? I'm here. I'm here to listen to you. Do you need a hug? God's here to give you a hug. I know you had a long week. I pray that this place is a place where it's kind of like home to you. You get to recharge and you find strength and life to go back out into the rest of your week. And I pray that when you go to Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, sometimes your week is going to be pretty rough. But I pray that because you have that desire and you met God, that keeps you motivated, that keeps you alive, keeps you putting one step in front of the other, going strength to strength. And I pray that the person that's in this place is going to bring you back on the path again and again.